back on a Young Turks. YouTube Super Chat allows you to talk to us and helps the show. Twitchable wrote there, thanks WikiLeaks. Now the next time you publish something actually important, we're going to have this argument about your credibility all over again.
Yeah, it's stupid. It's stupid.
Yeah, that's why them kind of picking sides in that election and not being clear about it, it hurt their cause. It hurt the cause of more transparency. That's why I'm bothered by it. Okay, Septian Patterson says about Judge Jeanine Pirro, why is she yelling like Samuel L. Jackson?
She's gonna have like a stroke or a heart attack at some point.
I think she might. Gabby Morita says, since when has a lack of evidence ever caused Republicans to back down from a witch hunt? How many Benghazi hearings were there? 8? Gabby, I think there might have been 9 actually. Ricky Santiago says, did I order corduroy? You're goddamn right. No, I'm kidding. That's a different Santiago. Okay.
What? He's,
that's from A Few Good Men. Oh. Anyway, Ricky says, out of all Cenk Uygur impersonations, his Jeanine Pirro is the most accurate. Why, thank you, Ricky. I appreciate that. All right, what's next, Anna?
All right. Let's move on. All right, so the House Judiciary Committee was questioning Jeff Sessions, Attorney General Jeff Sessions, as part of its investigation into possible Russian meddling in the 2016 election. And this was an interesting hearing considering some of the information that we now know regarding some campaign volunteers, campaign staffers, and the communications they had with the Russians. So of course, there's the Paul Manafort angle. There's the fact that George Papadopoulos has admitted guilt, although we don't know the full details of what he has and hasn't admitted to. Now, what is Sessions' take on this? Is he changing his story a little bit from previous hearings and the previous testimony that he has given? First, let's take a look at his answers regarding Papadopoulos and Paige Carter.
I would like to address recent news reports regarding meetings during the campaign attended by George Papadopoulos and Carter Page, among others. Frankly, I had no recollection of this meeting until I saw these news reports. I do now recall that the March 2016 meeting at the Trump Hotel that Mr. Papadopoulos attended, but I have no clear recollection of the details of what he said at that meeting. After reading his account, and to the best of my recollection, I believe that I wanted to make clear to him that he was not authorized to represent the campaign with the Russian government or any other foreign government for that matter. But I did not recall this event, which occurred 18 months before my testimony of a few weeks ago, and I would gladly have reported it had I remembered it, because I pushed back against his suggestion that I thought may have been improper. As for Mr. Page, while I do not challenge his recollection, I have no memory of his presence at a dinner at the Capitol Hill Club or any passing conversation he may have had with me as he left the dinner.
So we just showed you a small portion of the hearing. And for those of you who don't have the time to sit and watch the full hearing, I can sum it up for you by letting you know that Jeff Sessions responded to every question pertaining to Russia, because Republicans didn't want to ask about Russia. They asked about a variety of other random things with, I do not recall, I do not recall. He doesn't recall anything. He doesn't recall anything from a year and a half ago. If you can't remember things, significant things from a year and a half ago, I mean, can you remember anything? It was so obvious to me that, and then he would pretend like he didn't understand questions that were incredibly clear, and he didn't want to answer them. So
maybe he's going to go with the Alzheimer's defense too. So look, come on, guys, get a load of the obvious, on its face, absurd argument that Sessions is making. Now he says, I don't recall having a conversation with Papadopoulos. I did not recall having a conversation with Papadopoulos telling him to not put us in touch with the Russians. But now I do recall it, and I was awesome. And I told him, definitely don't have that conversation with the Russians. Wait, you didn't remember it at all before. Now that we discovered that you were in the midst of all these conversations about the Trump campaign talking to the Russians, now that you do recall it, You recall it with great clarity and emphasis, and how you almost yelled at him to not get involved with the Russians.
Yeah, just now you're the good guy.
Yeah, now your memory's crystal clear, right? Now, come on. You either remember it or you don't remember it. You can't. What he's trying to do is get credit, not get in trouble because he lied about not remembering things, because he just didn't want to talk about all the Russian connections, because there was a lot of Russian connections, right? Yeah. And he wants to get credit for that and get credit for it. Now, I told him not to go, though, and I told him not to put Trump and Putin in. He could get credit for the second thing, if he admitted, yeah, I lied to you guys. Of course I remember that conversation. I'm the one who told him to make sure that Trump and Putin didn't meet up.
Now, he explains why it's common for people like him to not recall certain things. Let's listen to his reasoning in the next video.
My answers have not changed. I've always told the truth, and I have answered every question as I understood them to the best of my recollection, as I will continue to do today. All you have been in campaigns, let me just suggest, but most of you have not participated in a presidential campaign, and none of you had a part in the Trump campaign. And it was a brilliant campaign, I think, in many ways, but it was a form of chaos every day from day one. We traveled sometimes to several places in one day. Sleep was in short supply, and I was still a full-time senator with a very full schedule. During this year, I've spent close to 20 hours testifying before Congress, before today. I have been asked to remember details from a year ago, such as who I saw on what day, in what meeting, and who said what to when. In all of my testimony, I can only do my best to answer your questions as I understand them and to the best of my memory. But I will not accept and reject accusations that I have ever lied. That is a lie. As I said before, my story has never changed. I've always told the truth, and I've answered every question to the best of my recollection, and I will continue to do so today.
But we know that's not true, because you recused yourself, because you said that you had never met with the Russians when Al Franken asked you about it in your confirmation hearings. Then we found out that you met with the Russians several times. Then you said, well, we didn't talk about policy. Then you admitted that you did talk about policy, and then you recused yourself. So you clearly lied in the beginning about meeting with the Russians.
No, Cenk, he didn't lie. It's just that initially he had no recollection. Now, it's just very, it's a coincidence that I conveniently have no recollection when it doesn't suit me to have any recollection, right? Like, that's the thing that's amazing. Like, that's his strategy, and it's worked so far. He just says he doesn't remember. Then he gets called out and he's like, oh yeah, now I remember. But hey, I was so tired and I was a full-time senator, because senators work real hard, right? With all of the staffers that they have reading the legislation for them and briefing them on things. I mean, the senators have gotten a lot done in the US lately.
But anyway, to be fair, the Republicans, when Clinton said that he was also tired and that's why lying under oath was no big deal, the Republicans were like, you're right, you're free to go. So Sessions, if you believe, like the Republicans, that what Clinton did was outrageous, lying under oath about an affair, this is lying under oath about things that involve the government and working with a foreign government to perhaps influence our elections. Way more important than Sessions should be gone. If not, I am expecting apologies for all Republicans who pursued impeachment, because now they apparently think that perjury is no big deal.
All right, moving on to Roy Moore. Lots of updates to that story, and I want to make sure you guys don't miss out on that. Several Alabama residents have spoken to the press about how Roy Moore, who is the Senate candidate, Republican Senate candidate in Alabama, was known to go after young teen girls, and it was just this open secret that no one did anything about. In fact, he moved up the ranks in his law career while this open secret was out in the open. And so I want to give you some of the direct quotes from these Alabama residents. Keep in mind, these are people in Alabama. These are not members of the DNC. These are not liberal individuals trying to undermine him. These are people who lived in his communities and were very familiar with him. So One individual says that these stories have been going around this town for 30 years. Blake Usri, who grew up in Gadsden and lives there currently, told AL.com, excuse me. He said that nobody could believe they hadn't come out yet because they're from 30 years ago. It's been going on for a long time. Another individual says him liking and dating young girls was never a secret. When we all were in high school in our neighborhoods up by Nakulala Falls, we heard it all the time. Even people at the courthouse knew it was a well-known secret. Another person said he watched us girls quite openly. His eyes crawled over our shirts and our backsides. He was so open about it that I would try and handle his order as quickly as possible.
Now, the Victoria that had that quote there, Beverstock, is is the only one in these stories that's actually above the age of 18. So she was 20 at the time when Roy Moore was checking her out. So that's fine. I mean, depends on your definition of fine, but certainly nothing illegal or for a guy in his 30s to check out a 20-year-old, it's okay. But point being is that everybody in that town, everybody in the restaurant he went to, knew that he checked out all the young girls, including the ones all the way down to 15. The girl that said he tried to rape her in the back of the old Hickory restaurant was 15 when he started hitting on her. And then he wrote in her yearbook when she was 16. So, and it goes on and on. And then you've got the mall, where apparently he was banned from the mall because he was known as a pervert who was trying to pick up young girls at the mall. And the off-duty police officers knew it. The people who worked at the mall knew it. Everybody in the community knew it. Roy Moore was the pervert. And now, by the way, you see all this, and it becomes clear why Roy Moore is a moral crusader. Because he's crusading against himself. He knows that he has bad intent. And so what does he do? He does projection. And he goes, oh, the sinners, the sinners.
It's a way of deflecting and making sure that you overcompensate in some ways to prevent people from investigating your own behavior. You know, look at that guy. Look at these people. They're the immoral ones. Meanwhile, it's out in the open that he's out there going after teenage girls and making them incredible, making them uncomfortable, and in some of the allegations, literally sexually assaulting them by grabbing, allegedly grabbing one of these women, girls at the time, by the neck and forcing her head toward her crotch. Toward his crotch. Now, the reason why I'm giving you more context into what people apparently openly knew about Roy Moore is because the response to Roy Moore has been interesting to say the least, especially when you compare it to other individuals who had been found guilty or pleaded guilty to similar predatory behavior and how they actually spent time in prison for doing so. But when it comes to the case of Roy Moore, oh, it's out in the open and he doesn't face any, you know, any part of our criminal justice system. So the RNC has now decided that they will not raise money for Roy Moore. They are not supportive of him whatsoever. On a national level, lawmakers are not supportive of him whatsoever. Now, on a more local level, though, in Alabama, that's where lawmakers could have a real impact because they could make a decision as to whether or not Roy Moore can move forward with this run for the Senate seat. And so the 21 members of Alabama's Republican Party Central Steering Committee, again, are the only ones who can pull Roy Moore's nomination and potentially block his path to the Senate after days of mounting allegations that their Senate nominee had sexual contact with teenage girls while he was in his 30s. Two Alabama GOP sources tell Talking Points Memo they finally decided to hold a meeting later this week to hash out whether they can stand by his side. So they haven't even made that decision yet. They need to have a meeting to decide whether or not they're going to take action. And some of these politicians are hesitant to do so because Roy Moore still has his backers in Alabama. And since nearly a quarter of them are seeking re-election, they're worried about losing that portion of the constituency and that portion of the vote.
They're very unlikely to do anything. Alabama Republican Party Chairwoman Terry Lathan said, quote, very unlikely that Moore would lose the party's endorsement. And in the entirety of the article and the discussions with these politicians in Alabama, the focus was What will the steering committee do because of the potential blowback to their careers? There was almost no discussion of, hey, this guy tried to rape a 16-year-old girl in a parking lot and nearly kidnapped a 14-year-old and then fondled her and all the different things that he did. That's not relevant. The relevant is thing is, how is it going to affect other Alabama
That's
Republicans?
Right. That's
and
right.
how is it going to affect
my
race?
It's amazing.
And you wonder why people hate politicians, okay? This is why they hate politicians. Because isn't there somebody who's going to stand up in the meeting and go, guys, what if it was your 14-year-old daughter that he brought into the woods? And he did. He brought her, he took her from her mom, the 14-year-old, drove her 30 minutes into the woods so that he could have her alone and strip her down to her underwear and make her touch his crotch after getting naked. He tricked the mom by saying that he was going to take care of her and he didn't want her to hear the painful custody hearings. And he said, it's okay, I'm the district attorney. Is no one going to stand up and say, what if it was your 14-year-old daughter that he took into the woods? No, hey, Bob, what do you think about your political career? Hey, Sally, what do you think about your political career? Let's have a conversation about our political careers. And by the way, the only reason why they're having that conversation about their political careers is not just because they're the only bad guys in Alabama. No, because they're worried that Republican voters in Alabama are deeply immoral and they don't care about child molestation. And if they vote against Roy Moore and take him out of that position, that the Republican voters in Alabama will stand with the child molester and then do political retribution on anyone who removed him.
Yeah, that's what they think. And I don't know how much truth there is behind that. I'm curious to see if some of these politicians actually have a spine and they speak out against Roy Moore and they just condemn him, if it actually does negatively impact their campaign for reelection. But look, there are two things that you said that concern me, not because you said it, but because it's so true in terms of the way that we handle these types of cases, right? The first issue is, putting your political career, I'm talking about these lawmakers, above actual, moral and ethical issues. Like, we're talking about Alabama lawmakers who are very much to the right, who are, part of this red state that believe in family values. And, I'm sure that some of those lawmakers probably had some strong feelings about transgender individuals being able to use the bathrooms that they identify with. And I'm sure that they believed and pushed this notion that they would sexually assault women in their bathrooms. And like, oh, they're so concerned about sexual assault. You have someone who has been accused of sexual assault by Republican women, by the way. The latest accusation was from a woman who supported Trump, so there is no political motive there. And yet, we got to worry about our own political careers. It's so pathetic. Have a spine. You're supposed to be in a leadership position. You should be a leader. You're supposed to protect your country, your constituents, and they're doing the exact opposite of that. The second thing I forgot, so I'll remember and I'll come back to it.
All right, so hold on. Are you going to do Joseph Lee Musso?
Because I am, because okay. I think that's an important,
important
story to juxtapose, Roy Moore to average Americans and what they deal with. So Roy Moore so far is not facing a criminal investigation regarding the accusations that he was sexually assaulting teenage girls when he was in his 30s. However, there are cases of men in the state of Alabama who have been prosecuted for predatory behavior. And one of those individuals is Joseph Lee Musso, who spent nearly 5 years in prison on the charge of using a computer to attempt to persuade, induce, and entice a child to engage in sexual activity. Now, the individual that Musso was communicating with online was not, in fact, a 14-year-old, but an undercover cop. And so he planned to meet who he thought was a 14-year-old girl. And then when he showed up, it was an undercover cop, and he faced this criminal charge. Now, in March of 2005, Musso pleaded guilty in exchange for a reduced sentence of 63 months. He served 1 month short of 5 years as a federal inmate. He did what most sex offenders have to do. He registered as a sex offender, that has had very negative impacts on his life. He's not able to get a job. His record says that his victim was a 14-year-old girl, even though there wasn't really a victim in that case. But nonetheless, I mean, he is a bad guy. His intention was to meet with a 14-year-old girl and have a sexual encounter with her. And so the justice system dealt with that the way that it should. But with Roy Moore, oh, he's a man in a position of power, so who cares? And he's a defiant person who refuses to ever take ownership or ever apologize. And since we live in this society now where apologies are looked upon as weaknesses, we're gonna give Roy Moore a pass.
So now let's look at, we just told you about Joseph Lee Musso. Let's look at the full record of Roy Moore real quick. Number one, he admits that he liked to date young girls as young as 16 when he was in his 30s. That part he admits. Everybody in town, the reporters go talk to and say, everybody knows that Roy Moore used to go after young girls, at least as young as 16. And he was apparently banned from the local mall because he was such a pervert that he'd go in his 30s trying to hit on teenagers. Okay, that's the part that's not illegal, just it is what it is, okay? Then you have the 16-year-old, and the legal age of consent in Alabama is 16. It was a 16-year-old that he took from a restaurant and said, I'll give you a ride home. It was a cold night, her boyfriend was late. And she had seen him all the time. She knew that he was a district attorney. And he had written in her yearbook, and he seemed like a nice guy. And she trusts him because he's the DA. He takes her to the back, gets her in the car, takes her to the back of the restaurant where there's no light in between the wall and the dumpster. And he rips her shirt open and gropes her and then tries to force her head down. The next day, she has bruises all up and down her neck. She starts screaming and screaming, tears streaming down her face. But she fights him off, and at the end, he gets frustrated, and he pushes her, and he says, you're a child, and I'm the district attorney. No one will ever believe you. Then he opens the door and pushes her out. She remembers him peeling away as she's lying on the floor in the cold concrete, okay? So that's the story she told recently. That's the one that she said she's a proud Republican and voted for Trump, and so did her husband. She has multiple witnesses that she told that story to a long time ago, 2 years after the attack, then 4 years ago to her mom, before she got married to her husband. She has all the corroboration, she has the yearbook. He did it, okay? And that was not consensual. He should be arrested for that, okay? Now, then you have the story of the 14-year-old. Same fact pattern, but way worse than Musso. Because there was a real 14-year-old. He goes up to the mom as she's sitting outside the courthouse. Remember, he's a district attorney. He says, you're gonna go into a custody hearing. I don't want her to hear that. I wanna spare her the trauma. And he starts to befriend the young 14-year-old girl when he's in his 30s as a district attorney. And he befriends her, he gets her number, says, I'm going to help. He finally gets her in a car. Don't go in a car with Roy Moore. He gets her in a car, and instead of driving her home, drives to his house 30 minutes into the woods. Then he makes her strip down into her underwear. Then he takes off all of his clothes. And then and it's painful to say, but he got her to, took her hand and made her touch his erect penis, according to the record, okay? Now that guy, and there is no statute of limitations in Alabama on sexual crimes against underage kids. No statute of limitations. So Musso, for trying to meet with a fictional 14-year-old that didn't exist, spent 5 years in prison.
And he's a registered sex offender.
Why is Roy Moore not immediately arrested? We have an incredibly credible witness. We have several witnesses, including the 14-year-old that said he sexually assaulted me. Running for Senate, why is he not in handcuffs? And this is what drives Americans crazy, rightfully so. There are two different sets of laws in this country. One for the rich and powerful, and one for the rest of us. You look at a 14-year-old the wrong way anywhere in the country, you're gonna go to prison, okay? Unless you have power, in which case you might become a United States Senator. And the 16-year-old said that she didn't even tell her sister for 2 years because she was so afraid of what that district attorney might be able to do to her and her family. That's power. And he used that power to molest little girls. And now we're having a conversation about whether he should be a United States Senator. The conversation we should be having is how much time should he spend in prison?
One final thing I wanted to add to this was the lack of response on Twitter by our Twitter loving president, who, by the way, reluctantly supported Luther Strange over Roy Moore during the primary in Alabama, and then was furious when it turned out that he didn't go with his gut to support Roy Moore. And he was very clear about that on Twitter. And this is just speculation, so take it for what it's worth. But I would venture to say that if Roy Moore was a Democrat who might have been critical of Trump, he'd be tweeting about it at 3 a.m. every day for the rest of his term.
Why is the Justice Department investigating the sick child molester Democrats? Why aren't they investigating? Why aren't they doing something about this? Did Robert Mueller have something to do with it? No, but it's a Republican you want to win that Senate seat. The sound of silence. The guy all of a sudden can't find a computer to tweet from.
And believe me, he's tweeting plenty, just not about this.
All right. Let's take a quick break here. We still have a devastating story, unfortunately, about two people. One is John Travolta, and the other is a Democratic senator. And that Democratic senator story is exactly how the rich and powerful win while you're not looking. But we're going to shine a spotlight on it. Don't miss it. All right, back on the Young Turks. I forgot to check how the Just Democrats are doing in the last segment. Let me take a quick look at that. JustDemocrats.com/too strong. Four excellent new candidates today. Let's get to $24,000. Get them some real money they can work with, including the guy who almost upset the Republican in Kansas. And just please check out that clip. If you're a member, watch the top of the show to see how fantastic our four new candidates are. Now up to 32 candidates overall. All right, here's some wonderfully random tweets. Nacho Mama says, Sessions' creepy mom watching over his shoulder was really weird. Hashtag sorry, not sorry.
Actually, a couple of the people in the background caught my attention during the here. I actually watched the whole thing this morning. The line of questioning and how much it differed between Democrats and Republicans was amazing. All of a sudden, you had Republicans that want to talk about marijuana legalization.
Yeah, that's absurd. Anyway. Okay, Heather Hallman says, I'm listening to Cenk and Anna talk about Hillary Clinton while knitting a pattern called Into the Woods. Hashtag hint, hint. Okay, unregistered Chicano says, Cenk Uygur, king of obscure references.
100%.
I got references from the 80s, the 90s. Pick a decade, any decade.
Yeah.
Have your own opinion, says the entire Sessions hearing boiled down to, I recall that I did everything correctly, but can't recall anything else.
Yeah.
Exactly. And finally, this is my favorite. Dan Steele says, my new girlfriend is a conservative, and she sometimes yells at the screen in anger when I'm watching TYT. Keep it up, Cenk. I think she's starting to like you. We win them over a little bit at a time. Hey, new girlfriend, how you doing?
I have deep admiration for people that can date outside of their political ideology.
Yes. Actually,
I mean that, by the way.
And it happens with a lot of conservatives. They have preconceived notions because they watch TV and they think that you're going to be in two different camps. Then start watching the show, and then we are actually honest about the corruption on all sides, and they're like, oh, these guys are actually kind of right. Mm-hmm. All right, let's go forward.
All right. Sean Hannity recently engaged in a kerfuffle with one of his sponsors, one of the advertisers on his show, because the advertiser pulled out following some of Hannity's support for Roy Moore, the Senate candidate in Alabama, who has now been alleged by several women of sexual assault when he was in his 30s and when some of them were minors. Now, Hannity has supported Roy Moore and then later kind of apologized for some of the things that he said. But before doing so, Keurig decided to pull its advertisements from Hannity's show. And then that resulted to a number of Hannity supporters breaking their Keurigs in protest. It was a Keurig boycott, right? Okay, so here's the update to the story. Keurig has now released a statement and they have kind of apologized, but not really. So I'll get to that in just a second. But Hannity recently called on his fans to stop destroying their Keurig coffee machines after the company's CEO apologized for a tweet publicizing the company's decision to pull ads from Hannity's program. So we're going to show you those videos in just a second, but I want to clarify what this so-called apology is. Now, to be clear, Keurig has still pulled its ads from Hannity's show. They're just apologetic about the fact that they publicized it on Twitter. And I'm guessing that they're apologetic because it riled Sean Hannity's fans up more than anything.
Yeah, so look, I get the sponsors are sometimes in a tough spot because you're damned if you do, damned if you don't. That's their perception. Because, I mean, if you don't pull ads from Sean Hannity when he appears to be defending a child molester, and Roy Moore, if you read the details of what he did to the 14-year-old girl and the 16-year-old girl, it is horrific. Well, I mean, then you're going to catch heat from people saying, why are you giving money to a guy defending a child molester? Then they pull the ads and they happen to tweet it publicly, like, oh, we're pulling the ads, right? There's a statement saying we're pulling the ads. And then conservatives lose their mind. We love child molesters. Why are you doing that? Don't do that. Okay, now to be fair, they're not saying they love child molesters.
They just love who defended a child molester, but okay, fine.
Okay, they happen to love Roy Moore. And if you want to give him all the benefit of the doubt in the world, they're not convinced that Roy Moore is a child molester yet, even though there are credible enough allegations that the almost entire Republican Party at the national level has said that they are not endorsing him anymore. And some have said they won't even seat him if he wins because he's that deeply immoral. So that's not the Democrats, that's the Republicans saying it. But if you're in the group that says, nah, I still don't believe all those Republicans, I don't believe the credit, I don't believe anything. Okay, maybe it's not that you're defending child molesters, you just think that this is the issue at hand. Anyway, so but Keurig and all those guys, they smashed the things and Hannity had a great time. And that's the heart of this story. Yesterday, as I reported to you, he's like, I love it, go get him. And he sent out tweet after tweet saying, smash him, I'm gonna buy you new coffee machines.
Yeah.
And then today, I'm sure that somebody pulled him in on both his radio show and Fox News and said, hey, Sean, you know we make most of our money from advertisers. If the minute you get upset with an advertiser, you're telling everybody to smash their product, we're not gonna get any new advertisers.
Right.
So that's what I told you would happen yesterday. And today, that's exactly what happened. So all of a sudden, Hannity in a massive backpedal.
So let's take a look at the first video of him backpedaling.
A very important message tonight. I'll explain. Please stop smashing your Keurig coffee machines. I'm going to explain how this company was totally exploited. They are actually a victim in all of this. I want to once again thank all of you for your support. It blew me away. But for now, please, please stop destroying your coffee machines. As I've been saying, Keurig, they're a victim in this. As of now, today, before this ever happened this weekend, I have 5 Keurig machines, 5 of them. I have never supported a boycott in my life because I know what they're about. They're about censorship. And by the way, I'm not going to start tonight. You fought back. So tonight, now, please, I'm calling for a ceasefire here. I humbly appreciate your support, but I'm asking you to not smash your Keurig. Now, as I said, I own 5 Keurigs. Please stop destroying yours. And by the way, for the people who did, later this week I have a big announcement. I will be giving away 500 coffee makers. Now, I'll decide on the brand that I'll be giving away in the coming days based on how things unfold.
Oh, is it going to be Keurig? Oh, that was so pathetic. I have five Keurig coffee makers. Please stop smashing them. Please, please. I love Keurig. Keurig is the best. Oh my God, please keep advertising with me. By the way, Keurig is, again, they did pull out. They just apologized for publicizing it because in the CEO's word, it gave the appearance of taking sides. Yeah, I think that giving the appearance of taking the side against someone who defends a child predator is okay, but nonetheless, whatever, advertisers, finicky bunch.
Okay, listen, put aside the politics for a second.
Five of them.
No, that was just awesome. Because now are you clear on who Sean Hannity works for? Okay, and Mr. Tough Guy, I'm tough, I've got principles, I fight every day. And then an advertiser's like, hey, what are you doing? I'm so sorry, please. I don't want you to break the Keurigs, I want you to caress them. Good Keurig. Okay, I can buy 10. I smear Keurig coffee all over me. Who do you work for, Sean? Oh, you work for your advertisers, right? The corporations who buy ads on your, that's okay, that's okay. Just be honest about it. Well, now you don't even have to be honest about it, because even if you're a conservative, you saw what happened there. Your tough guy, Sean Hannity, when it touches his pocketbook, not so tough.
I don't know. He had a brute awakening.
Oh,
oh man. Did that joke land?
I think that joke might have landed, yeah. I'm going to give it to you.
No one reacted.
But that's it was it was our sidebar yesterday.
Oh, it was. That was what we chose. That's right. That was actually my suggestion.
Well, there you go. Okay.
Okay.
Anyways. All right, what? Got to take a
break? Yeah, no, we don't have to take a break. Okay. I want to get right to Mark Warner. During the 2016 election, the Democratic Party was accused time and time again of being elitist and not serving the best interests of its constituents and those on the left. And some on the left were incredibly puzzled by those accusations. But Mark Warner and his recent proposal in regard to payday lenders and deregulating them is a perfect example of why it appears some establishment Democrats have no interest in looking out for the best interests of the American people, but rather the best interests of corporations and those who want to do predatory lending. So for those of you who are unfamiliar with payday lenders, they have gotten a lot of flack in recent years over the interest rate that they tack onto these payday loans. And they're short-term loans, but oftentimes what happens is people can't catch up with them, so they keep taking out more. And in some cases, the interest rate that's tacked on can be up to 400%. And so there were efforts by the Consumer Protection Bureau to regulate these types of payday loans so it would cap the interest rate to the same interest rate that is lawful in any given state that this company operates in. Now, let's give you the details on what Mark Warner wants to do. In late July, didn't get much news, but Warner introduced Protecting Consumers Access to Credit Act of 2017. The legislation would allow payday lenders to ignore state interest rate caps on consumer loans as long as they partnered with a national bank. Now, national banks deal with some regulation, but it's much more laxed when it comes to the issue of interest rates. And so when these predatory lenders, these payday lenders realize that, they realize that, hey, if we can just work with a national bank, well, the national bank can give out that loan initially and then immediately sell it off to us. And they get a commission, we get the money, we get that high interest rate. It was just a scheme.
So it's complicated, but I want to just explain it just a tiny bit more. So if you're just working within the state, they can regulate you and limit you to 36% interest rate, which is what most states do. Now, 36% interest rate is still gigantic, okay? But okay, fine, at least it's capped. But they found a loophole. The loophole was, well, if I'm not giving you the loan, but a national bank from a different state than this one is giving it, then they're not subject to the state law.
That's right.
So technically, the bank is giving you the loan and then converting it, as Anna explained, which allows them to charge interest rates up to 380%. Mm-hmm. Now, Mark Warner, I don't think that I'm going to give him way too much benefit of the doubt here. I think that he genuinely believes that he is trying to stimulate business. Okay. Now, it doesn't hurt that they are stimulating his campaign contributions, right? And that's usually how it works. And they pour in a lot of money to him and to other Democratic senators. But they get themselves to believe, no, especially the Silicon Valley guys, there's a couple of sophisticated new companies that are going to do this, and they need access across the states. But in reality, no, they're using the same loophole to be able to charge 380% interest.
Yep.
So Mark Warner introduces it and paints it as he's protecting your access to credit. No, you've got the access to credit either way. Just under one circumstance, they still charge you a huge interest rate of 36%. In the other one, they're charging you a rate that is so high that it gets you into a cycle of poverty. And
yes,
to give you a sense of how bad it is, according to Pew, a typical customer keeps on rolling over the paydays because it's such a big fee that they're charged. Look, people don't have a lot of money. You know, the people in Washington and New York, it's unfair to say they think it's a joke. They just are not familiar with it, right? So they can't comprehend it. You know that for about 3/4 of Americans, they could not withstand a $700 blow to their finances.
They're a one paycheck away from being in a significant financial problem.
Yeah, and so for them, borrowing, for example, $375, they wind up having to pay a $55 fee. So if you're rich and you're Washington, New York, you're like, $55 fee, what's the big deal? Okay, but that's only for a couple of weeks. That's what winds up being 380%, and they can't pay that back because they keep running after it. So for the typical consumer that does that kind of loan, the fee winds up at the end being $520 when the original loan was only $375. So the loan that they got to pay back, the interest they got to pay back, is more than what they originally borrowed. And this is what keeps people in a cycle of poverty. That's why they want to do regulation on this. And instead, he proposes,
wants to do the opposite. And he wants to essentially pull back regulations or deregulate this industry further. And keep in mind that this is something that is likely to pass because, one, the media is not on this at all. I want to give Zach Carter at the Huffington Post credit for reporting on this because this was not on anyone's radar. And remember, the first proposal was back in July. It's likely to pass because it has bipartisan support. So there are corporatist Democrats that are in favor of this. Let me give you the details on that. Now, companion legislation is scheduled to a vote in the House Financial Services Committee today, where the bill has the backing of Representatives Greg Meeks, who's a Democrat in New York, and Gwen Moore, who's a Democrat in Wisconsin. They're so-called liberal Democrats with a history of sympathy for the financial industry.
They're not liberal Democrats.
Yeah.
Just because you think gay people should have the same rights as straight people and black people should have the same rights as white people doesn't make you a liberal. Those are guys who consistently sell out to the financial industry.
So Warner's Senate version is also co-sponsored by Tea Party darling Senator Pat Toomey and Senator Gary Peters. So to your earlier point where, you know, you're trying to be fair and you know, give him the benefit of the doubt. I'm not buying that. He knows who he's working with. And to think, oh, maybe he really is trying to stimulate business and help people out. Not, no. 400% interest rates on payday loans. How does that stimulate? Yeah, it stimulates business for these payday lenders. Certainly doesn't help the American people.
Look, and don't get me wrong, he gets himself to believe those pretty little lies.
Yeah.
So, and the reality is, this is how they rob you in the middle of the night. Because while you're looking at Trump's tweets and the big plans of the Republicans to do X, Y, or Z, all of a sudden we have bipartisanship on an issue where the banks win and you lose. Wow, funny how that happened. One of the other people supporting the bill is arch conservative Patrick McHenry. So somehow arch conservatives and Democrats wound up agreeing on a bill where you pay all the money and the national banks and the payday lenders and now some of the new more quote unquote sophisticated version of payday lenders in Silicon Valley all get rich.
And look, I think that the big takeaway from this, aside from a really terrible policy proposal, is the fact that you know, you have members of the Democratic Party who don't understand why voters feel like they were abandoned by them. This is why. You think people are stupid? You think people don't know? You think people aren't dealing with terrible economic situations that you aren't addressing properly? That you're actually, you know, taking counterproductive measures against? I mean, come on. And it's pathetic. And they're so defiant about how far removed they are from the actual struggles of average Americans.
Yeah, and by the way, it's not like they didn't know because the Americans for Financial Reform, the Center for Responsible Lending, Consumer Federation for America, the NAACP, the Southern Poverty Law Center, all wrote letters to all these Democrats saying, don't do it, don't do it. This entraps people into this cycle of poverty. This is a terrible piece of legislation. And the corporate Democrats looked at it and went, yes, but you're not our donors. And then they go, what, we're liberals. Why are people frustrated with establishment Democrats? This is why. It's a system of corruption. It's built on corruption. Private financing leads to them working for private interests. It's way past time that they work for our public interest. All right, we're out of time here, guys. We do have a little bit more for the online audience, so stay right here. We'll be right back for you guys. For the radio audience, we'll see you tomorrow. All right, bye. Back on the Young Turks, one quick tweet for you. The Young Feminist says, my favorite part of this story is Cenk's pronunciation of Keurig. Why? Why am I saying it wrong?
Keurig?
What am
it's
I?
Like
I'm saying
Keurig. Cure an egg, I think. Keurig.
Keurig. Keurig. Keurig. Okay.
I don't know. Who
it's,
cares?
It's among the least problematic pronunciations I have.
Yeah, my favorite. The way you say buffet is funny. Oh, there was a celebrity.
You mean buffet?
Yeah, buffet. And then there's a celebrity's name that you always mispronounce, and it's hilarious.
Oh, John Cusack.
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 Cusack. Yeah.
He's an excellent progressive.
Cusack.
Okay.
It's hilarious
and statistic.
Every time.
And field goal. Anyways, all right, we move forward.
Okay. Radar Online. Whoa, sorry. Radar Online has obtained a police report that was written back in February 15th of 2000 against John Travolta. It was written by a 21-year-old masseuse who claimed that he was sexually assaulted by John Travolta. And even though the police report was written, it was never made public, and they managed to get a hold of it and publish it. And so I wanted to share with you the allegations made against Travolta and how this case later played out. Now, the 21-year-old who has not been identified, again, he was 21 at the time of this incident back in 2000, allegedly was groped by John Travolta. He says that his bare buttocks was groped. He was John Travolta indecently exposed himself and made lewd remarks about gay fantasies. Now, this allegedly took place at the La Quinta Hotel in Palm Springs, California, when Travolta demanded a deep body massage at the facility spa, which had been opened after midnight for the actor's private use on February 15th, 2000. Now, according to the allegations that, again, were recorded in this police report, during the massage, the star kept removing the towel, exposing his bare buttocks. After a body scrub treatment, he says Travolta told him, quote, he was very attractive and that he had gotten him excited. At that point, Travolta had asked him if he had ever, okay, hold on. Before we get to that, hold on. I got to fill in some blanks that we didn't make graphics out of. So he told, you know, he told this masseuse allegedly that he was attracted to him and that he was getting excited by that. And then at that point, Travolta allegedly asked him to go into the steam room with him. Mm-hmm. And they both went in, they were wearing towels. At that point, Travolta took his towel off and told him, do you want me to show you how I like my massages? And then the masseuse said, sure, and he was lying down on his stomach. Travolta allegedly moved his towel and started to massage him in his inner thigh, upper thigh. And then he got uncomfortable, got up and left. And then he said he was taking a shower. Travolta followed him into the shower and asked him if he wanted to have his back soaped up. And he said no, left, got dressed. And then he was supposed to give Travolta some other massage, but he refused to do so, packed up his stuff, and he called the authorities. And that was when this police report was written. Now, other accusations that were detailed in the police report, these are difficult to even read, so I'm warning you guys. Travolta asked him if he had ever had his asshole licked by another man. What would he do if he ever had a sexual encounter with another man? And if so, tell him what he would do so he, Travolta, could have something to fantasize about. These were comments that were made when the masseuse was packing up his stuff after he refused to give Travolta another massage.
Oh, man, I'm not sure there's going to be any end to these stories. Forever there's been rumors that John Travolta is gay. If you lived in LA, I don't know, almost everybody knows that in LA. But you know, then you tell people that don't live in LA, and they're like, what? John Travolta? No way. Next thing you're going to do is tell me that Tom Cruise is gay. Did I say that out loud? Anyway, okay, so that's, but who cares if he's gay? That's not the issue here, right?
Yeah.
Then the other part of it is, by the way, not masseuse, but masseur.
Is that really, am I saying it wrong?
A guy is a masseur.
Oh, I apologize. Yeah. I actually didn't know that. Super ignorant.
No. Yeah. I didn't know it until I read this story. Anyway, but masseuses and masseurs must have a million of these stories. So now if these start coming out, it'll be you know, one after another after another, right? How many times is, especially a person who's got any degree of power, it's a guy, gay or straight,
right?
Getting a massage. I mean, you know, I go to any masseuse or masseur and ask them these, has this ever happened to you? And I would be shocked if every single one of them didn't say that it has happened at some point. Yes. Now, by the way, does that make it right? Absolutely not. But this is the development of society, right? So as we people get the message, don't, you're just because they're a masseuse doesn't mean you get to ask them to do crazy things or touch them or proposition them, etc.
Right, of course. So I just wanted to fill you guys in on what happened with this case. As I mentioned, a police report was filed immediately. The allegations were sexual battery. However, the police did not open an investigation because they believed that there was not enough evidence to prosecute. So that was the decision made. Later, there was a civil suit, two separate civil suits against John Travolta by masseurs, and both cases were dropped. In one of the cases, there wasn't evidence that John Travolta was in the same place at the same time, meaning the same city at the same time, or even the same state at the same time. So that's relevant.
That's super relevant.
In the second case, it's unclear why that was dropped, but neither case moved forward.
And guys, so accusations don't mean that it definitely happened,
yeah.
Okay? And these were not adjudicated. And it might be that they were not adjudicated because the cops are like, oh, he's got a lot of power, let's let this go, okay? But has that happened before in American history? Only a million times. Or it might be that they were like, look, you don't have enough evidence that there was non-consensual touching within the context of this massage. So that's entirely possible, right? And in the case of Travolta, he is enormously wealthy. So when you have a case where the guy says he touched me inappropriately, but it turns out Travolta wasn't even in that city, that sounds fishy, right? Mm-hmm. So let's make sure that we're shining a light on things that are going wrong so that we can fix it. And I think that we are doing that now overall. And I think the society is getting to a better place. And guys are being more careful. That's a good thing, okay? At the same time, let's respect people's rights. And I have no idea here if Travolta did anything wrong or not wrong, right? For you progressives out there, you won't do this, but some will jump to conclusions because it has in their mind a tawdry angle that Travolta's gay and et cetera. Who cares about that stuff? So, but not every accusation means that the person actually did it. So let's all be as fair as we possibly can as we discuss these cases that are important to society and coming to a new place where actions like this, if they are true, are frowned upon, which is good news overall.
Yes.
Okay. All right. Fascinating stuff. We're out of time. We do have a post game for you guys. You'll get that, and you'll get the whole show ad free, of course, if you join us at tytnetwork.com/join. Before we go, one last check. So because we announced four new awesome progressive candidates for Just Democrats today. Please check out the beginning of the show if you didn't, whether it's you watch it on YouTube or you become a member to do it. Because some of those stories, including Kaniella Ng in Hawaii, are amazing stories. And let's get those folks some resources that they need. All right, thank you guys.
Bye-bye.